Well, we're halfway through 2021, so now's a good time to look back and reflect on the year so far, and then look forward to see what's ahead for our property markets and the economy. But boy, what an extraordinary year we've had so far. Property values across Australian capital cities have experienced double-digit growth already in all capitals other than one. And despite the COVID concerns we're experiencing around Australia, there's plenty more growth ahead for our property markets. Clearly, buyers are out in force, owner-occupiers, investors, first-home buyers. And that's at a time when the available supply is struggling to keep up with demand, which means property prices are moving higher. The surge in property values has caused the property bears to go back into their caves. They're hibernating again and has forced our banks to do an about-face. And all the major banks are forecasting 30% rises in property values around Australia this cycle. Now, of course, that's on average. In some markets, some areas are going to do much better than that. And they're all suggesting that our property markets are going to continue moving on for some time. And the economic Armageddon predicted by some of those last year, that didn't eventuate, and we didn't fall off those cliffs that were meant to litter our path along the way. So in today's podcast, I'm going to have a chat with Australia's leading housing economist, Dr. Andrew Wilson, as we look back on what's happened to price growth so far, and then look forward to give you some thoughts about what's ahead. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialise in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
No one would have predicted the unprecedented, record-breaking levels of house price growth that we've experienced in the first half of 2021. Now, I've been investing for almost 50 years, and I've never seen such growth. I've never seen such strong growth and such consolidated growth in all our property markets, other than the high-rise CBD markets. It's happening in all our markets. I've never seen that in almost half a century of investing. In a moment, you're going to hear my chat with Dr. Andrew Wilson, Australia's leading housing economist, as we discuss his statistics for the first half of this year. And you'll also hear our thoughts about what's ahead. But because you're going to be listening to the audio portion of our weekly Property Insiders video, where the viewers were able to see some charts, I'm going to first walk you through some of his statistics. And he found that the outstanding performer so far this year has been the Sydney property market, where house values have increased 17.8% so far this year in the first 6 months of 2021 alone. In fact, Sydney home values have increased 24.2% in the last 12 months. Sydney apartment values have also increased, but not as much. They've increased 7.3% in the last 6 months and 9% in the full year. And it's the same trend around Australia, where apartments haven't performed as strongly as houses. Over the last 6 months, in the first 6 months of 2021, Melbourne property values increased by 11.8%. Brisbane values were up 10.7%. Adelaide values rose 10.4% and Perth values increased 8.1%, according to Dr. Andrew Wilson's My Housing Market Statistics. Now, it's important to remember that capital city values set their previous records in September 2017. And today's values are only about 10% higher than those previous records. In other words, the markets did what they always do. They operated cyclically. We've had periods of flat growth, periods of no growth, and even periods where property values dropped. And this time round, property price growth's being driven by the low interest rate environment, by the various government incentives over the last year or two, and the broader context of Australia's soaring economic recovery, including very robust employment numbers. When people feel secure about their jobs, when they feel secure about their financial future and employment, they make big investment decisions like buying homes. And you've heard me talk in previous podcasts about how this is creating a cycle of upgrading where people are upgrading their homes, tenants are upgrading to become first home buyers, other tenants are upgrading to live in better rental accommodation, established home buyers are upgrading their accommodation, and others are actually downgrading for lifestyle, moving into family-friendly apartments or moving, a few people, not a lot, are moving to regional Australia or a bit further out. So the low interest rate environment has been helping in conjunction with just increased confidence. Of course, the other critical factor this time round is the fear of missing out, you know, FOMO. It's a self-fulfilling cycle where those yet to buy in the market are motivated to do so by the prospect of having to pay more if they want to get into the market later on. Now, none of these factors look likely to change over the rest of 2021. So, in my mind, it's likely that house prices could rise another 10% before the end of the year. Now, of course, this is just average price growth. And the upper end, the more affluent, expensive end of our property markets are outperforming cheaper properties at the moment. And for the last few months, capital city properties are outperforming regional Australia, which performed more strongly during the COVID lockdowns last year. Now, you're going to hear more details about this in my chat with Andrew Wilson in a moment. And you're also going to hear why we think, in due course, house price growth will slow, maybe by the end of the year. But let me be clear. I'm saying the rate of growth of house prices will slow. We're not suggesting house property values are going to drop anytime soon. Now, of course, house prices can't just keep increasing at the rate they've been doing indefinitely. And if they overshoot the mark too far, clearly they're going to come down a little bit. That's happened in previous cycles. But I can't see that happening for quite some time yet. Look, I'll be open, I'll be transparent. I'm currently in the market for a number of properties and I'm about to start another townhouse development to keep as a long-term investment. I'm taking advantage of the property market and if you're in the financial position to do so, I'd recommend you do so also. Hey, but don't get caught out by buying any property. I'm already seeing too many investors make FOMO mistakes. They're taking shortcuts, they're buying secondary properties, they're just the fear of missing out is getting to them, emotions are driving their decisions rather than numbers and figures. So as I said, in due course, the property markets will slow down and affordability is going to be a major issue for this because affordability is going to become an issue, particularly for people at the lower end of the market where more affluent people are going to still be able to afford properties. You see, while low interest rates make larger borrowing more affordable, first home buyers, they're already being priced out of the market. After leading the initial recovery, housing finance data suggests that demand for new homeowners has already peaked and that investors are now moving in and taking their place. In tandem, as I said, the top end of the market's now driving the strongest gains, where in the early stage of the pandemic, it was more the lower end of the market that spiked first. The other thing that may slow us down moving forward is if the regulators get involved. Historically, surging house prices have tended to lead to a deterioration in lending standards, and our regulators were worried about the risk of financial stability, and that gave them the impetus to put their foot on the brake, to tap on the brakes. Remember, they did that a couple of years ago when APRA stepped in and it slowed down our property markets. But this time around, the Reserve Bank has given really strong indications that they won't use monetary policy to slow the markets, well, not yet at least. So the expectations are that instead they and APRA are going to look for macroprudential controls, such as increased rate buffers. In other words, even though you can borrow at 3% or 2%, you're going to have to be able to prove serviceability at 5% or 6% or 7% like they used to. Or they may put limits on loan-to-value ratios or high debt-to-income ratio lending. So that could be one of the factors that will slow the markets down moving forward. And one of the other reasons things are going to slow a bit is because the government stimulus measures are being wound back. Just look back last year, HomeBuilder was a major driving force for our property market through the pandemic. It did its job, but it's now ended. And the small estate housing incentives are also going to be retired over coming months. The other factor that hasn't affected us so far, but may a little bit moving forward, is low immigration. I mean, clearly, restrictions on immigration have cut a level of underlying demand for houses. In fact, statistics would suggest that they've cut the demand for new housing by about 100,000 dwellings, nearly 50% this year. But eventually, our borders are going to be open, but it's not going to happen quickly. It's not going to happen overnight. Even with a vaccinated population, borders are probably going to be open gradually, and quarantine requirements are going to be in place for quite some time. So immigration will recover, but slowly. But interestingly, currently there's a lack of new apartment construction. We've built lots of houses, but they're not speculative and they're basically built for owner-occupiers. But the new apartment construction, which takes a lot longer to build, there's much longer lead times, lag times in the apartment construction, that's not happening. So it's likely that we are going to have a looming undersupply of apartments once our borders are open, which is going to help push up property values. Another effect is really going to be the remote working and the disruptive effect that COVID's had on us, so that more of us are going to be working remotely or part-time from home or flexible hours, which is going to increase the emphasis on lifestyle and living in the right neighbourhoods. Now, that's something I've spoken about often in this podcast before. So there will be a number of things dampening property price growth. And while the price growth is good for me, having a significant property portfolio, I don't like seeing such booming markets. Well, I do in one way, but I also know what happens if markets get too far ahead of themselves and they actually go too far the other way and they crash. But I can't see that at the moment because it's really not speculation that's driving this market. As homeowners, owner-occupiers, the level of investment is still on the low side compared to long-term averages. So with that long introduction, now let's turn to the audio of my recent weekly Property Insider video chat I had with Dr. Andrew Wilson. Now, you can catch that each week on my Property Update newsletter or on YouTube, or just go to propertyinsiders.info and you can subscribe to our weekly YouTube channel. Well, let's have a look at the economy and our housing markets and how they've performed over the last 12 months. Let's start with the property markets, because despite the doomsayers' dire predictions that our housing markets were going to crash, they remained resilient last year. Sure, the growth was stifled a bit by a lack of consumer confidence, but we called it in October last year that the markets turned then, and they've gone gangbusters in the first half of 2021. Already with your figures here, most of the markets other than Perth have already exhibited double-digit capital growth this year alone.
Yes.
So those who heeded the negative Nellies last year, they lost out, while home buyers and property investors who took a long-term view, they're already experiencing quite significant capital growth, Andrew.
Yes, it is a remarkable market, Michael, not just the fact that we're recording around double-figure growth this year so far in every capital city market, with the exception of Perth, which is just a little lower, but these figures are preliminary. They won't be too far off the mark, but what a start to the year. And we really haven't seen these sort of numbers ever, certainly in the modern era. Unique nature of this data is that it's so consistent across each of the capital cities. It's not just a sort of a Sydney boom or a Brisbane boom, which we've seen in the past. It's an across-the-board breakout in house prices. A lot of it is that catch-up energy, with buyers still having a reasonable affordability profile in terms of the fact that even though Sydney's prices have grown by a significant amount over the last 12 months, they're still just around 17% higher than where they were 4 years ago. So that really tells us that the average, even with these extraordinary numbers, particularly coming out of Sydney, is still around about 4% per year over the past 4 years. And of course, we've had more than a 1% fall in mortgage rates and more than a 6% increase in incomes over that period. So this is why we're seeing all this catch-up energy. It's about making up for all the lost opportunities over the last 4 years with all those roadblocks that we've had over that time, credit squeeze, the fear campaign, the Royal Commission into the banking sector, the last election, all those things. And of course, COVID acted to stifle normal demand and supply matching. And now it's sort of catching up. And there's still some way to go, Michael. There's certainly no sign trending downwards. And without the dampening effect of higher interest rates, as that story's lost a lot of the energy of a week ago. Of course, I think that those banks, Westpac and Commonwealth, who were predicting higher interest rates next year in the case of the Commonwealth Bank's economists, would be wanting to revisit those predictions quite soon. We had the intergenerational report out this week, Michael, but it's quite gloomy in terms of the outlook. Sure that now with more concerns over COVID feeding the economy, that the prospect of higher interest rates coming sooner rather than later is just cloud cuckoo land stuff.
Well, looking at house prices, Sydney's been the outstanding performer. Your figures show 17.8% growth this year so far. Melbourne, 11.8%. Yeah. Brisbane, 10.7%. This year, 2021, Adelaide, 10.4%. And Perth, which has come off a very low base at 8.1%. And the full year, they've all done really well. So they're already going to have double-digit growth this year. The rental markets have been different, though, haven't they? They have suffered a little bit more.
Well, rental is certainly a two-speed rental markets when we look at the capital city comparisons, Michael. There's no doubt that the Melbourne and Sydney markets, particularly in terms of units, rents are still falling and vacancies are still high. Although let's look at the latest data. The monthly data has actually shown quite a significant fall in vacancies for apartments, inner city apartments in both Melbourne and Sydney, Michael. So they're certainly soaking up that. And I think open borders are affecting that. Fewer Airbnb properties in the permanent market because they are starting to get holiday tenancies and business tenancies. Now, of course, COVID's going to change all that again, but we have seen a starting of an adjustment downwards with those very high vacancy rates for units in Melbourne and Sydney, which, as I said, are particularly inner city and CBD unit vacancies and vacancy rates are falling still high. The other capitals, except for Melbourne and Sydney, Michael, certainly running out of tenant properties or properties available for tenants. We're seeing vacancy rates continuing to fall for both houses and units in the other capitals, and rents are rising quite sharply. I think we've got two factors working at that. We're certainly seeing fewer supply, new supply coming into the market now. But the other factor, of course, in terms of particularly the Brisbane market, is migration patterns. There's no doubt in the latest ABS data reinforced that there's a surge in and will likely continue in migrants moving into southeast Queensland, particularly from Victoria. And that's putting upward pressure on vacant rental properties. And rents, of course. But I think the other interesting thing in terms of the rental data, Michael, is that we're seeing some weakness in rents for houses in Melbourne and Sydney, particularly Melbourne. And I think in some areas that does reflect the migration patterns. And also I think the lockdown issue means there's not as much churn or turnover in new rental activity, new tenants, because of lockdown restrictions. But certainly all the capital city markets, with the exception of Melbourne and Sydney, are clearly exhibiting signs of shortage of rental properties and very strong growth in rents and vacancy rates falling, starting to get down towards zero in a number of those markets.
Sure. Well, over the last year, property values were resilient. Interestingly, our rental markets also, they did remain resilient because each state government introduced their own temporary measures to stabilise the rental markets, to prevent evictions, to support tenants in hardship. And there were all those concerns, again, what will happen when those measures were removed, and that didn't happen. Much the same with the economy. If we look back over the last 12 months, the economic Armageddon that was predicted, it proved nothing more than a hysterical paranoia. Today, our economy is arguably the best it's been, well, probably since the GFC. And all those cliffs that were predicted, Andrew, remember that? They didn't eventuate. Deferred home loans that will never be repaid and cause mortgage stress. Well, that didn't cause forced sales. There weren't a huge number of mortgagee sales. Yeah. And unemployment didn't rise to the heights some predicted. And again, there was no cliff after JobKeeper ended. So our economy over the last year experienced that V-shaped recovery that I think we all hoped for, but not many of us expected.
I'm not sure there's actually a letter to describe the recovery's path, Michael. It's beyond a V because the top part of the character is way above the bottom part of the character. So it's not a V. It's like a tick.
It's a Nike swoosh, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. It's like that, or a tick. Yeah, so it's the tick recovery. Perhaps we can put that one in.
Yeah.
Certainly beyond a V. And there were others talking about the W, which was up, down, up, down. Commentators get seduced by the glory of the cheap headline, and they sort of run away with that, and that's what's happened. We all were in a period of uncertainty. Let's be clear, we get your holds in terms of the pandemic outcomes. But logic told you that there was nothing really fundamentally impacting our economy and our housing markets other than confidence and the restrictions of movement. And once we could get the restrictions of movement behind us, which we did, and nobody was to sort of predict how that would occur, but we did, we knew almost certainly that we would get back to what we were in terms of our fundamentals for housing market and our economy. And I think the Australian economy deserves a big pat on the back because it really did adapt quite quickly to the changed environment. And, you know, the fact that there was all this predictions at the end of JobKeeper would mean a surge in unemployment sort of meant that people were, it's the old sort of position that people were happy to take a government subsidised income. Well, Australians don't want to be on welfare. They want to get back up and running again. And they did quite quickly. And of course, there was, in fact, rather than a spike upwards in the unemployment rate following the end of JobKeeper, we actually had a spike downwards, Michael. So that was a reverse tick in terms of the end of JobKeeper. But we've still got challenges ahead, but we are a strong performer internationally in terms of our economic performance, and that will continue, but we need to keep adapting to change. And the biggest, you know, obvious impediment is these constant shutdowns, but at least we won't be bombarded and our confidence won't be bruised by relentless predictions of Armageddon for both our housing market and our economy.
Yes, the bears have gone back in their cave. Now, when we look back over the last 12 months, population growth stalled, didn't it? It increased by 136,300 people in 2020, and that was the slowest population growth since ABS records began. Interestingly, we had fewer babies born, and that was the prediction of the demographers too. We're not going to have COVID babies if we're a bit concerned about our financial futures. We hunker down, we don't make more babies. But the other interesting thing is deaths dropped as well. So our population didn't grow much, but I think it's the internal migration that has affected our housing markets, Andrew.
Oh, absolutely, Michael. We've seen some remarkable shifts, and to continue, because all this, the lockdown issues really do, as they keep almost relentlessly impacting Melbourne and Sydney particularly, it starts to have people thinking of options, and the usual destination for that sort of get away from it all is southeast Queensland. And even though it's had its challenges in terms of lockdowns, there's no doubt that southern state lockdowns have accelerated demand to live in southeast Queensland. And there's so many positives for that market in terms of continued price and rent growth, not the least being that it's still remarkably affordable compared to Sydney and Melbourne. So those that do move up there sort of come up with a bundle of cash generally if they have sold their properties in Melbourne and Sydney. Those buyers that are advantaged by high affordability because they can purchase property similar to where they've lived quite comfortably either on the Gold Coast or Brisbane. And we're seeing that now with very strong prices growth in Brisbane and the Gold Coast, and also rental increases, Michael, for those who go up there in the short term. And the more lockdowns we have, the more we'll have that impetus from southern states particularly to move into Queensland particularly. The other interesting thing in terms of the migration shifts was we had international migration just fell through the floor into Melbourne and Sydney, Michael, net migration. This was predicted down by 90% in both Victoria and New South Wales. But it was interesting that actually New South Wales stood up compared to the rest in terms of net international migration. And I think the better performance from New South Wales was because Sydney's a key destination for expats. And that's helped to keep parts of the Sydney market bubbling along, particular parts because of high demand from expats who have continued, as if they could, once they can get in, purchase property, obviously, with the same sort of affordability advantages coming from a higher price, perhaps international markets, European and US markets.
Well, one of the things we didn't mention when we talked about the property markets and how they're performing, clearly different segments of the market have performed differently, and one has to look more granularly rather than just say what's happened per state, and maybe we can do that in another chat. But the higher end of the market has outperformed the lower end over the last little while, hasn't it?
And I think that's a bit of that catch-up energy as well, Michael. It was an underperformer, and perhaps trade-in market's been quite strong there as well. All parts of the market have performed strongly, some better than others, but prestige property has been a positive. And again, I think that's because it was flat for a few years, as most of the market was. So there is that capacity to catch up. But really the question now, Michael, is when are we going to start seeing an easing in this? This is not sustainable at these levels. Let's be quite clear about that. We don't have the prospect of higher interest rates to tap this market down. So it will just run out of steam because we can't keep going to the bank and asking for an extra $100,000, $200,000 to pay for the properties pay the price that's being asked. So eventually, and of course, the buyer surge will be satisfied to some degree as well. People would have bought, sold, and getting back and enjoying their properties for the next 6 to 10 years, whatever the average is. Well, it is 6 years. But so we're satisfying a lot of demand, and we're not getting the new demand from internationals coming in to offset that. So eventually the market will run out of steam. But the question is, when will it run out of steam, Michael? I still firmly believe that the end of this year, the Christmas break period, will be the time that we really start to see a levelling off and a cooling of our markets. But they'll still have a nice warmth about them, I think, going forward, particularly given my concerns over undersupply of our markets, which I think is a big issue, which we'll have to confront over coming years once we get our health issues behind us.
So to make it clear, you're not talking about the property values dropping. The growth is going to slow. And in fact, it's very likely going to slow in the second half of this year anyway. Yes. It'd be very hard to keep up the growth it's had recently. But interestingly, despite COVID, well, was it really a recession we had last year? I know you're doubting whether that was the case. Australian households keep getting richer. Household wealth grew more in the last year than it did in the preceding 3 years combined. So despite living through that little recession, household wealth in March this year, the latest figures from the ABS, increased by 15.3%, the fastest rate of rise since the middle of the mining construction boom in 2010. Now, of course, much of our wealth is related to the fact that we own property, which has gone up. But Credit Suisse, which once a year does the World Wealth Report, says Aussies are the wealthiest adults in the world, and now 1 in 10 Australians are technically millionaires, partly because of the value in their homes, Andrew.
Yes, Mike, and I saw another report that said on an individual basis, Australia is the second wealthiest country in the world, second only to Little Switzerland. That's pretty good considering they're such a small country and they have such a strictly managed economy. But yes, second only to Switzerland and not too far behind in terms of our wealth. So
there's also a World Happiness Report, Andrew, that I saw this morning, and we're amongst the happiest countries in the world as well.
Why wouldn't you be when it's only Little Switzerland that's doing better than you? So come on, everybody, let's put on our happy face and realise that. And I think it's also interesting, Michael, that the headlines over the last few days seem to be, I'm not saying generally, but just a few of the usual sort of left of centre suspects, and I mentioned CNN as one of them, are trying to have a go at Australia for dropping the ball, and Australia thought it was so good, and being highly critical of the fact that we have a handful of COVID cases again, and that's ruined our record now, and we're back to being where Europe and the US are. I mean, come on.
No.
Give us a break. We are not even within light years of, unfortunately, what other countries, particularly European and US, have had to suffer through this pandemic. And you'd be pretty confident, and fingers crossed as well, that we'll also manage to get out of what's occurring sooner rather than later. So more cheap headlines, who can be surprised? And from the usual suspects, who can be surprised?
Well, looking back over the last year, our economy's grown, our population has remained stable, our housing values have gone up, we've got jobs, we're feeling secure. So the future's looking bright, Andrew.
Yes, it is, Michael, but what's so different about that?
No, and we should be appreciative of it. Look forward to our chat again next week, Andrew.
Thanks, Michael. Thank you.
In a moment, I'm going to share with you my mindset message. But if you'd like to get some more information about our property markets and get some reading material to help you become a better property investor, go to podcastbonus.com.au, where I've got a bunch of reports and ebooks to help you become a more informed property investor. I'll leave the link in the show note, podcastbonus.com.au. Now, before I share my mindset message with you, just following on from my discussion with Andrew Wilson, I hope now you can see it's not too late to get into this property cycle. Sure, it would have been good to buy a year ago or 10 years ago, but even though the markets are moving, not all properties are going to increase in value. So that means now more than ever, correct property selection is going to be critical. And you can trust my team at Metropole to help you with direction, with guidance, with results, because we don't sell any property. So whether you're a beginner or an experienced investor, at times like this, you need a holistic approach to your wealth creation. And that's what my multi-award winning team at Metropole do. So go to metropole.com.au, find out about what we do. And if you're interested, we'd love to have a chat with you, because it all starts with putting a strategic plan together for you and your family. Planning is bringing your future into the present so you can do something about it now. And sure, you could use our buyer's agency, wealth advisory, financial planning, property management, renovations or development services, but you've got to have a plan. You've got to know where you're heading, and then we'll help you get there. Go to metropole.com.au. I'd love to be part of your ongoing wealth creation journey.
Now here's Michael's mindset message. Remember, a change in your thinking will lead to a change in your life.
In today's mindset message, I'd like to share with you a daily tool that the rich use, the successful people use, that never occurs to most people. You see, over the years, I've worked with and mentored many successful investors, many successful business people. I've built a successful business myself. And I've found that these other people I deal with, they use a daily tool that doesn't occur to most people. Now, I'm sure you've heard about to-do lists. The best to-do lists incorporate daily activities that help you move towards the life goals that you're wanting to accomplish. I use an electronic one. I use a program called Trello that's on my phone and my iPad and on my computer. But I've found that to-do lists alone are not going to make you successful or ultra successful. While it's important to get things done, it's equally important to avoid doing things that are going to wash out all the benefits of a to-do list good habit. Now, you've probably never heard of to-don't lists before. I discovered this little known secret years ago, and it's been a major part in my success. A to-don't list is a daily list that includes things you should never do because they're either time wasters, bad habits, poor habits, or things that hold you back from having a happy, having a successful life. And as you've heard me say in the past, we're all driving around with one foot on the accelerator and one on the brake. We're doing good things that are getting us to where we want to go, but the foot on the brake is actually holding you back. So to-don't lists are just as important as to-do lists. Now, most successful people fostered accomplishments in their lives by diligently doing certain things every day, but they also did it by diligently avoiding certain things. Unfortunately, most people aren't as successful in their life as they'd like to be. They eke out a living, they struggle to get by. They're unaware, though, that they're engaging in destructive activities on a daily basis that makes the success that they're looking for impossible. They're engaging in habits that might appear on a typical to-don't list. Things like, don't watch more than an hour or two of TV every day. Don't waste time on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. Don't envy other people. Don't make impulse purchases today. Don't gossip today. Don't gamble today. Don't drink in excess today. Don't lose your temper today. Don't ignore your family today. These are all the things that should be on your don't list. Don't read negative news articles today. Don't procrastinate today. Don't ridicule anybody today. Don't hate anyone today. Don't smoke a cigarette. And don't be negative. Don't be pessimistic today. Now, for those who have a lot of bad habits, to-don't lists are actually even more important than to-do lists for them. To-don't lists keep you aware of things you shouldn't be doing. Knowing what not to do is just as important in achieving success as knowing what to do. So my mindset message to you today is, what would be on your to-don't list? When you ask yourself that question, only then will you become aware of the daily habits that are constantly pulling you backwards. To-dos, while a great tool, are going to help you improve your chance for success, but they're only going to get you halfway there. To-don'ts, to-don't lists are going to take you the rest of the way. I hope you got some benefit from my chat with Andrew Wilson and also from my mindset message. And if you did, I'd like you to help others who you think would benefit from it as well. If you know somebody who'd get some benefit from hearing what we had to say, tell them about the Michael Yardney podcast or leave a review and tell the world about it. That'd be great. And if you want to catch me in between these twice weekly podcasts, just look out for me on social media, Michael Yardney, and you can also subscribe to my daily property briefing at propertyupdate.com.au. But every day I leave some snippets which I don't leave elsewhere on our private Facebook group. So go to Facebook and look for the Property Update private Facebook group, and why not join us I'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey. I'll be back again real soon. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?